Here's my guest, Peter Coyote, to put James B. Johnson in context.
His audacious Harlem stride piano style transformed ragtime into jazz before 1920 and influenced Fats Waller, Duke Ellington, Count Basie, and Thelonious Monk. His piano rolls, published between 1918 and 1922, were among the finest of their kind. His later recordings reveal exceptional piano skills, equal to keyboard masters like Willie the Lion Smith and progressives such as Art Tatum. He was a popular attraction at rent parties, clubs, and dance halls in Harlem. He had perfect pitch and was in great demand as a session musician in the 20s and 30s. His list of collaborators reads like a who's who of jazz and blues. Bessie Smith, Fats Waller, Clarence Williams, Ethel Waters, King Oliver, Mez Mezero, and Sidney Bechet. And his Charleston became the signature tune of the Roaring Twenties. He should have been hailed among the greatest composers, jazz musicians, and songwriters of the jazz era. But even after all this, he was almost unknown to the general public. When he died in obscurity in 1955, he had been out of the public eye for 15 years. And had barely performed or recorded in a decade.
Now I've got them hungry blues. Nothing in this world to lose.
His name was James P. Johnson. James Price Johnson was one of the greatest geniuses of American music. His composing partners were the cream of black cultural overachievers. UB Blake, WC Handy, Andy Razzoff, William Grant Still, and the poet laureate of the Harlem Renaissance, Langston Hughes, with whom he wrote a one-act blues opera. James P. Johnson composed prolifically, creating or collaborating on 16 musical stage revues, landmarks of their kind in black theater. Keep Shufflin', Messin' Around, Swingin' the Dream, Shuffle Along, Kitchen Mechanics Review, Sugar Hill, Meet Miss Jones, and more. Not yet satisfied with his achievements, James P. Johnson sought formal training in classical piano technique and music theory, harmony, composition, counterpoint, and orchestration. He began to compose major orchestral works. Over a dozen concertos, suites, and symphonic works. Some were performed in Carnegie Hall as early as 1928. Others were never performed or published in his lifetime. James P. Johnson's dramatic symphonic poem, Drums, was originally written for the 1932 show Harlem Hacha. Later, he orchestrated it as Those Jungle Drums, a tone poem with lyrics by Langston Hughes. And Johnson himself recorded a 2.5-minute version for piano in the 1940s. Lost for 40 years, Drums was restored by extensive research in cooperation with the Johnson family and premiered by the Concordia Orchestra in New York, now heard on a Musical Heritage Society CD.
We heard the world premiere recording of James P. Johnson's symphonic poem, Drums. This tribute to James P. Johnson began with a summing up of James P. Johnson's masterful contributions to American music.
I'm Peter Coyote. This is Jazz Rhythm, classic jazz, old and new, with Dave Radlauer.
Peter will be back shortly. Thanks for joining me for this first of three Jazz Rhythm programs, saluting an American musical genius, much overlooked in his time and even today, James P. Johnson. During this hour, I'll be sharing with you James P.'s music in diverse forms, his original recordings of stride and piano rolls and with bands in the 30s and 40s, his symphonic music, and his tunes played by Fats Waller, Dick Hyman, and Marcus Roberts. Just ahead, Johnson piano rolls and solo recordings ranging from 1921 to 45.
James P. Johnson's Carolina Shout was key in the transition from piano ragtime to syncopated Harlem stride jazz piano. Recorded as a piano roll in 1918 and again in 1921, it was a dazzling showpiece, combining a left-hand bass line with the right hand skittering across the keys, flashing harmonies in thirds. Carolina Shout became the test piece of all urban ragtimers, and set the standard for a decade of piano professors. Few amateurs could master it. Johnson infused into Carolina Shout and other compositions the music and rhythms he had heard as a youth from the black community around him, set dances and other rural dance steps. But his music always incorporated folk materials. His long residency performing in the late teens in the Jungles, a rough black section of Hell's Kitchen in New York, kept him in contact with the culture of newly urbanized rural blacks, and particularly many Gullah people from South Carolina, who brought with them cotillion dances, ring shouts, and West African ancestor dances. Johnson reworked these raw elements into his personal stride style, in competition with other popular piano entertainers of his day like Lucky Roberts, Willie the Lion Smith, and UB Blake. Thank you. James P. Johnson described one of his regular jobs around 1913. The people who came to the Jungle's Casino were mostly from around Charleston, South Carolina, and other places in the South. Most of them worked as longshore on ships that called at southern coast ports. There were even some gullers among them. They picked their partners with care to show off their best steps and put sets, cotillions and cakewalks. It would give them a chance to get off. The dances they did at the Jungle's Casino were wild and comical. The more pose and the more breaks, the better. These Charleston people and other Southerners had just come to New York. They were country people, and they felt homesick. When they got tired of two steps, they'd yell, "Let's go back home, let's do a set," or "Now put us in the alley." I did my mule walk or gut stomp for these country dances. The dances ran 15 to 30 minutes. They'd dance, hollering and screaming until they were cooked. But they kept it up all night long until their shoes wore out, most of them after a heavy day's work. The Charleston, which became a popular dance step on its own, was just a regulation cotillion step without a name. It had variations, all danced to the rhythm that everybody knows now. It was while playing for these Southern dances that I composed a number of Charlestons, 8 in all with the same rhythm. One of these later became my famous Charleston when it hit Broadway. Duke Ellington, who was inspired, influenced, and encouraged by James P. Johnson, said, "He never lost contact with his foundations, with the real, wonderful people of Harlem. Harlem had its own rich, special folklore, totally unrelated to the South or anywhere else. So in that atmosphere, I became one of the close disciples of the James P. Johnson style. Some nights we'd wind up, James, Fats Waller, and I, and go down to Mexico's to hear Willie the Lion. So we would sit around, and during intermission, I'd move over to the piano. Then it would be Fats. Afterwards, he'd look over his shoulder jovially at James and call, 'Come on, take the next chorus.' Before you knew it, James had played about 30 choruses, each one different, each one with a different theme. By then, Willie the Lion would be stirred up. James had moved into his territory and was challenging. 'Get up and I'll show you how it should be done,' he'd say. Then one after the other, over and over again, they'd play, and it seemed as though you never heard the same note twice. James, for me, was more than the beginning. He went right on up to the greatest. You know, he ordinarily played the most, and in competition, a little bit more. Other times the bunch would get together, get James cornered, find a taxi, or maybe walk over to someone's house and ring the bell. This would be 3 or 4 a.m. "Who's that down there?" they'd growl. When the answer was, "I got James with me," those doors flew open, lights switched on, cupboards emptied, and everyone took a little taste. Then it was me or maybe Fats who sat down to warm up the piano. After that, James took over. Then you got real invention, magic. Sheer magic. James, he was to his friends, just James, not Jimmy or James P. There never was another. Thank you.